This is the In Focus podcast from The Hindu.
Welcome back to the In Focus podcast. I'm Jayant Sriram. In our last episode, we looked in detail at the foreign assistance now pouring in for India by way of critical medical supplies from countries around the world and whether this would help us tackle the current coronavirus crisis that we face. Today, we look at how things are shaping up with the logistics of managing this crisis domestically. Shortages of medical oxygen, of course, continue to be reported from across the country. And as registration opens up now for all adults in the country to get a vaccine shot, there is still the big question to address. Will there be enough supply to get it to everybody? We discuss all that and the trend lines with the latest coronavirus numbers with The Hindu's deputy science editor, Jacob Koshy. Right, so yesterday we did an episode with Suhasini basically tracking the supplies coming in now from other countries. Other countries that have pledged to send India supplies to tide over this crisis. And today I thought we'd take a stock of what the situation is domestically as India is trying to ramp up production, basically organize the logistics around dealing with this crisis. So I think the kind of obvious place to start is with oxygen supply, because we've had a really rough, the past 1 week has been terrible. If you look at news reports, if you look at social media, it's basically awash with you know, messages calling for oxygen, calling for beds. We've had news reports of people dying because hospitals have run out of oxygen supply. So, you know, basically, where are we with that? What has the government done? What is the plan for the planning the logistics around oxygen supply right now?
So, as you pointed out, right now it is, we are in a state of scramble, so to say. The effort in the last 1 week or so is basically to be able to have enough oxygen cylinders, or in some cases, oxygen concentrators, or in other cases, you know, ensure that hospitals which already have existing oxygen supply lines to their patients, they be replenished quickly enough so that patients who are already admitted in these hospitals get oxygen at the adequate levels. Unsurprisingly, the states that are seeing the highest caseloads, you know, Maharashtra, Delhi, Uttar Pradesh, you know, these are the states where this demand has accelerated. I mean, it basically stems down from a lot of people, you know, testing positive, a lot of people showing symptoms such as breathlessness. And because of the state of panic involved, I mean, a lot of people are showing up at health facilities and demanding a bed. But unfortunately, even in the best of times, you cannot, you know, everybody who wants a bed right now simply just cannot be serviced. It's almost like the equivalent of a run on a bank. If everybody wants to withdraw their deposits in the bank all at the same time, the banking system collapses. So it's kind of akin to that. And the demand right now is simply humongous. However, right now, the move has been to divert industrial oxygen. Most of India's oxygen producing plants are in the eastern and central parts of the country. And it's from here that they have to actually be diverted to the north and pretty much all over the country, to the west. And this requires mostly road transport. And that obviously takes its own time. And now with a crisis in several states, are laying claim to you know, their own oxygen production facilities. So this is you know, this is a chaotic and crisis ridden situation. Production has increased, you know, and India's daily oxygen production is about some 7,127 metric tons, and its requirement has increased by nearly 76% in 10 days. You know, so that kind of spike in demand is very hard to immediately meet. So this cannot be resolved easily, but it will over time. But unfortunately, the situation does seem that, you know, many people will be denied of the kind of oxygen-enabled beds that they rightfully or, you know, they necessarily need, because...
Right. So I think the next big question now we have to come to is vaccines, because we're recording this on April 27th.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, the registration starts for all adults to start being vaccinated from May 1st.
Yeah.
Now, the big question then becomes,
where are we with supplies? Do we have any supply? Do we have enough supplies of Covishield and Covaxin? And have we heard anything about any other, you know, brands or types of vaccines coming in to help with this supply side issue?
Since as far as just pure supply is concerned, there is no sign that there is going to be a substantial increase in the number of Covishield or Covaxin or any other vaccine for that matter from May 1st at least. As we've discussed, you know, previously, both Covaxin and Covishield are expected to really ramp up their production supplies only really from August and September, because that's the amount of time that they would require to scale up their manufacturing facilities. Right. So, and already that we're already seeing a shortage in vaccines, even right from April 1st. Even now, there are many people who aren't getting their second shots, or even though they've taken prior appointments, they are not, registrations are getting delayed. And from May 1st, because the overall supply hasn't increased, and any of the Sputnik V vaccine, for example, that was cleared, you know, that has still not arrived. Dr. Reddy's is supposed to import a certain number of doses. And though other firms are expected to manufacture it, we don't know when that manufacturing is going to begin. Again, these are all supposed to have happened only around August, and, you know, when the supply will truly increase to meet the kind of population demand that India exerts, so to say. Because remember, now both Covishield and Covaxin makers have actually announced their prices that they're going to be selling to states. So how will each state negotiate? What are the terms on which they will negotiate? Will bigger states and, you know, states with more cases and with more numbers have an advantage over smaller states? Already we've been seeing disputes among various states about the prices and about access. So a lot of this chaos and confusion is expected to continue. And we'll have to wait and watch how that actually pans out.
Right. Yeah, you were talking about pricing. What do we know about pricing so far? Because as you said, the messaging on this seems to be all over the place, and we still seem to have no clarity about who is sharing the burden of the pricing.
Yeah.
You know, in terms of what is going to be the price at private centers, at public health centers. What can we say sort of for our listeners for sure at this moment about what we know in terms of pricing?
So what we know for sure is that for every 100 doses that, let's say, Serum Institute of India produces, 50 will be given to the center, and the center will use that as part of its existing vaccination program, that is everybody above 45. And those who are in governments, access it in government centers will get it for free. Those who access it in private facilities will get it for 250 rupees. However, it's the remaining 50 doses. I mean, the remaining 50 doses can be sold to states according to the liberalized policy of the government. It can be sold to states as well as private facilities. For states, Covishield has announced a price of 400 rupees a dose, and private facilities can get it at 600 a dose. Whereas Covaxin, you know, is being sold at 600 rupees a dose for states and 1200 for private facilities. We also know that in private facilities, for instance, you can only access these vaccines if you register for them online. Right now, anybody can actually walk into any of the vaccination centers and get pre-registration on site. There's a lot of discretion left up to the states. The states can give vaccines to those below 44 for free also, and they can actually set in certain age, relaxed age criteria on their own. In that way, those vaccines can be provided in government COVID centers for free for those below 44. And many states have already said, Rajasthan, Delhi, for instance, have already said that they will be providing vaccines to everybody for free. So it is quite likely that this is going to be the trajectory they will choose. Many companies have also said that, you know, they would be interested in vaccinating their employees. Over time, I guess this will be a smoothened out process, and, you know, there will be pretty much vaccines should be available on call. Remember, after some time, we are also expected to see a increased supply in the range of vaccines. Once there is enough supply, there should not be much of a problem. But again, this is something that will happen only over time. Over the next couple of months, irrespective of how you slice the cake, there is going to be shortage and intense disputes over availability of vaccines.
And just to quickly jump topic again, Jacob, we also have to discuss the surge in cases. It shows no signs of stopping. You know, what do we know about the, is there a trend line that we can see in the numbers so far? And, just to take you back to some of your recent reporting on variants, what role is the UK variant in particular playing in the surge in cases?
The trend line, unfortunately, seems extremely pessimistic. I mean, we are going over 3.5 lakh cases a day. And modeling by different kinds of experts suggests that, you know, we could go all the way to 4.5 lakhs. Some are saying 5 to 10 lakhs, you know, and those are truly, truly scary numbers. I mean, it is just literally beyond comprehension. But most of them seem to agree that by this logic, by about mid-May, we should hit some kind of a peak and we could see a quick decline. The more worrying part, however, in testing. In Delhi, for instance, we have a test positivity rate of 35%. That is, in Kolkata, there are reports that it is nearly 50%. That is, literally 1 in 2 is testing positive. And coupled with the fact that, you know, people are signing up for tests but are not getting results even after several days. This is a kind of a systemic collapse as we are seeing. And at least till mid-May, I mean, if all these projections are true, you know, we are going to see a sharp incline. However, several other assumptions about this pandemic also has kind of been questioned. I mean, there was a certain belief that, you know, given our experience with last year, a certain percentage of population would have been exposed to the virus and were unlikely to have been seriously infected again. There was always a talk that, you know, there would be a certain percentage that would be reinfected. But in the case of India, we really do not know whether many of those who have been affected before are contracting the infection again, aided by newer mutant variants, and whether they are acting as significant spreaders. This is something that, again, only the future will really unravel after more kinds of such investigations are done. On the other hand, the UK variant, it has been brought into India, you know, because of travel between UK and India, especially North India from Punjab. And there were reports that, you know, there have been at least 4 major, what you call, super spreading events in Punjab. Remember, this is the time when life had absolutely been normalized in the last six or seven months. So there were weddings, processions, Mahapanchayats, the farmers' protests. You know, all of these were, you know, significant events that saw extreme crowding. And it has been hypothesized that, you know, the UK variant really took hold from here. And because it's from here that it has spread to several northern states like Delhi, Uttar Pradesh, Haryana. And travelers who have arrived, you know, from the UK and, you know, several other, you know, parts of Europe who've come through Delhi, which is, again, a major international airport, you know, they have again from here traveled to several parts of Central India. You will see the interesting thing, how we know this is because when you see based on the genetic sequencing of samples, it turns out that, let's say in Punjab, for instance, there were about 8 cases of the UK variant found in positive samples from people who were travelers or, you know, their contacts. Whereas there were 543 instances of the UK variant in the wider community. Now, that's a huge kind of ratio. You'd see similar kinds of trends in Delhi and, you know, Haryana, where, you know, for every one person who tested positive and had the UK variant and who had a travel history, international travel history, there could be 2 or 3 in the wider community who have got the variant. But such a trend is not there in, for instance, Kerala and Tamil Nadu, where there are actually more cases of the UK variant within only in travelers and their contacts and less so in the community. However, in states like Maharashtra, for instance, it's the Indian variant or the double mutant variant, as it's popularly called, that is more prominent. It's because of genomic sequencing that we're able to now see the more aspects of coronavirus and its mutations, and we're able to keep track of which mutants are spreading more easily. So all of this in some way, coupled with the massive crowding and the sheer population of India and how people-to-people contact is among the highest anywhere in the world, it is all of these factors that kind of explain how we are in the midst of such a massive second wave, which will be with us at least for a month or so, if not more.
All right, Jacob, then we'll wrap up this episode here. And I think we'll sort of return soon for another weekly or bi-weekly update.
Okay.
And thank you for joining us today to just explain the situation domestically.
My pleasure, Jay. Bye.
In Focus, we'll be back soon with analysis of the biggest news issues. In the meantime, you can find our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, and other platforms. Just search for In Focus by The Hindu. We'll see you soon.